everybody. Welcome. This is Mike in the Field. My name is Mike. This is a music podcast. And today on the show, we'll get to talk to Mr. Andrew Blowen, an amazing vocalist, keyboardist, and songwriter. I've had the great honor of knowing and working with Andrew over the years, over a decade now. And Andrew's been so important to me as a musician. And just over the course of, you know, the time we've known each other, I just like to pay attention to what he says, because he won't cop to this, but he's actually pretty wise, and he's an amazing musician, and I like to hear what he has to say about music, and he's kind of helped kind of guide me over these last years, and I've become a better musician because of knowing him. So anyways, not to get all corny, but yeah, let's talk about the new record. It's coming out April 16th, Resurrect, brand new Fire in the Field album. April 16th, get it on all major streaming services. Whatever you use for a streaming service, search Fire in the Field, give us a follow, and boom, you will be notified when that album goes live. So we actually come into this conversation with Andrew when he's talking about growing up, learning Beatles songs, and having a piano in the house, and that's kind of where the conversation starts. And we get into sort of the creative process. We talk about a project we're working on right now. Hint, hint, the next record. That's right. It's almost done. Okay, let's get to it. Andrew Blowen is the guest here on Mike in the Field.
So, like, when you were younger, you were saying how you, like, you learned a lot of Beatles music, right?
Yeah,
Were you, like, super aware of Billy Preston? Like, were you thinking about, like, who was on the records and...
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, I was from the, probably, like... I don't know how, like 6 or 7, probably.
Really?
Damn, when I was like so all about Billy Preston. It was really funny.
Did you have a way to learn that stuff? Did you try to figure it out by ear or just?
Well, I started taking piano lessons when I was around 5, like, or so.
And you started learning Beatles stuff right away? Or did you learn from method, like from a book or something?
Well, when I started taking lessons, it was more like classical, but the reason that I ended up taking lessons in the first place was that we had a piano, and I was like trying to figure out mostly Beatles songs, but like before I had lessons.
And you were just trying to figure it out by ear without any like book or
anything
like that?
Yeah, totally.
That's cool. What kind of piano was it?
It was like a grand upright. So it was an upright piano, but it was like really friggin' tall. I mean, granted, I was really short at the time, but it was definitely a tall piano. It was awesome. I loved that piano.
So did you start like getting frustrated with classical lessons, or were you just like, oh, I'm just going to figure out Beatles stuff on the side?
Yeah, no, I got frustrated playing classical, because it just wasn't what I wanted to do.
It kind of blows my mind that you had that intention when you were that young, because I feel like I was just like, I don't know, just like show me something, you know? Like I don't feel like I wasn't aware of like popular music and like what was going on. Like,
I don't think I was that aware of.
But it's cool. But you were hearing the music in the house. Is that so? You're like your folks.
Oh,
like,
yeah, totally. Yeah, 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 right, right. I mean, I got made fun of for liking.
Really?
Oh, yeah, totally. Like, I remember. So Tattoo You by the Stones. I loved that record. Like, I don't know how many times I made my parents play that record for me. Like, when I was, whatever, too young to be touching a turntable.
It's amazing.
So, I used to, that was one of the records that I'd, like, beg them to put on. And, I remember other kids making fun of me because I loved it so much.
And they were listening to fucking, like, kid music.
No, I think, no, but it was more like Duran Duran or...
Yeah.
You know, or Michael Jackson, or, You know, not that I didn't like Michael Jackson, but yeah, I really loved like all that.
It's interesting that like at some, such a young age, you can be like, oh, you like this music? Fuck you. You know, like
right?
I feel like at that age, I didn't have any, again, I feel like I had no social awareness of like a culture surrounding like taste. It was just like everything was just music. You know, I don't feel like I really developed any of that until I was way older.
Yeah. I was super interested in it from a really young age. And my dad is a really kick-ass musician that doesn't know that he's a kick-ass musician, you know? And he loves all kinds of stuff, but in particular at the time he was all about the blues. And I remember like a lot of like Blind Willie McTell, stuff like
real
that
old shit.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Like but at the same time, like we went to, I remember going to see Buddy Guy with him and Taj Mahal when I was super young. But we also went to see like Pete Seeger, stuff like that. I think that my dad had it like musically, he really liked the blues. And then in a like socio-political kind of thing, he was really into, yeah, like the sort of that, well, I guess hippie. Yeah.
Like the whole thing, like Dylan and Jefferson Airplane and...
Not so much Jefferson Airplane.
Janis Joplin and the Stones and...
Yeah. My mom was more about the Stones.
Joni Mitchell.
Blondie. The Cars.
Yeah.
Like, it was kind of cool because my dad didn't... I felt like my dad didn't love that stuff. Like... He was fine with it, but he wouldn't seek it out, you know, or like Fleetwood Mac, that kind of thing. But yeah, my mom was super into that stuff. And so it was kind of a cool, like, juxtaposition of these two.
Where do you get the Jethro Tull love?
I don't know. I feel like neither one of my parents loved Jethro Tull, you know, but... Cool. Like someone, like an uncle or something, gave, you know, Aqualung to my parents as a gift. And I found it a few years later and just destroyed it.
Yeah.
Like I just listened to it over and over and over again. And yeah, and actually that was about the time. Like I was definitely old enough to use the turntable at that point. So it also coincided with my, like, smoking weed.
Oh, man.
And
yeah.
So I remember getting high. I was like 16, maybe, getting high and putting on headphones. And my stereo was on top of my dresser. And
you pull it down.
Cable wasn't long enough to reach to my bed. And so I would sit with my back up against my dresser with my headphones on.
Yeah.
Super stoned. Not even considering the fact that I could get a longer cable and be comfortable. What a dick.
I wonder if it made you more attentive to the music in some weird way.
Totally.
So you wouldn't fall asleep.
Well, I suffered for it. Man. That's what happened. I mean, I remember like very vividly, like my leg fell asleep. And
this song is awesome, but it hurts.
My back a little sore. Totally. I was like, I can take it.
It's an ancient Hindu technique.
Exactly.
No, it is weird though, man. Like how weed can just like what, how it changes sound or just like the perception of sound is enhanced or changed.
Yeah.
Fun. I was talking to Jared about the first time you fucking did that movie, the fucking Pink Floyd, Dark Side of Oz. Did you ever do the Dark Side of Oz?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Wizard of Oz synced up to Dark Side of the Moon.
I have watched that.
Was that like a seminal moment for you? Or was it... You can be honest.
There are some parts that are like pretty awesome, as I recall. But then there's a bunch that I'm like, yeah, okay, I see. Mm. Like, if you want it bad enough, it's there.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, like, yeah.
I don't think that anyone in Pink Floyd had that in mind.
No, I don't think so either. But I remember it being fucking awesome because it was bong loads and then that at that age when you're like, we were really starting to play music together. So it's just definitely a thing.
Like heavy metal, like the movie.
Oh, yeah.
With that cool ass Donald Fagen.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That shit.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
What does that keyboard sound on that? It's a Whirly or
Rhodes.
It's a Rhodes. I think. Okay, always.
I mean, he
flip them.
Typically played a Rhodes, but I'm sure he played Wurlitzer a couple of times, at least.
Why do I confuse the two? I don't know.
Well, they're very. I mean, they're similar. That's funny. I didn't like Wurlitzers for a long time. Like I didn't. I was like a super Rhodes guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now I love Wurlitzer. I love Wurlitzer for recording. Like, it occupies a really cool space, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's stony.
No, I mean, it's stony, but it's also like a mixed term, too.
Yeah.
You know, giving something its space, I mean, that's valid in that context. It's crazy what my cousin Wes just did to one of my tracks, like something that I mixed. The tune that I showed you, right? So, like, I had my mix for it, and it was as good as I could do. And he sent back this master, and it's, like, incredible what he did to it. It was, like, it's almost like it's like a whole new thing in a way. Not that he remixed it, per se, but just the way he talked about how he gave some space to the elements.
Yeah.
And I was just like, holy shit, it's so hard when you're in that hole of mixing, looking super, super close at things to come out of it and sculpt it perfectly, which is so good to fucking pass it off for mastering. But yeah, that idea of space, man. It's true.
I love the idea of having one person or one, you know, handful of people like engineering a record, and then another person that has been uninvolved thus far having them mix it. Like, it's cool.
Totally.
It can be like really humbling, but it's also like it yields super cool results. And
yeah, it's like, I mean, if you're just, you're in the process of capturing it for so long and you've done however many takes, or you just have lived in that world for so long. So how do you assess it without any, you know what I mean? Yeah. Mm. What the fuck am I trying to say? It's like you just have a bird's eye view on the project.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
Especially when I'm doing it on my own, like my mix, like I just bury the vocal, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And he sent it back to me, and it's just like completely just like out front and super intimidating to hear it. But it's like, it's right. And he
totally,
and I wouldn't have been able to put myself up to doing that.
Right, right.
You know, because right. of how I'm involved with it.
Yeah, I hear you, man. It's hard to be objective.
That's the word.
You know, and it's funny because people are insecure about different different things too. Like, I feel like I'm not as insecure as I should be, maybe vocally sometimes, but I totally am playing keys, you know, like I'm definitely like, shit, this isn't one of the like four things that I can do. Now what?
Yeah, right, dude.
No, I'm serious.
I feel like everyone feels like that to an extent.
I hope so. Yeah. That would make me feel better if everybody else felt bad too.
Dude, literally, like every like time I'm like, oh yeah, I'm gonna do this project. I'm like, all right, this is gonna be a great project. It's like I'm having like a pep talk to myself. I'm like, it's gonna be great. We're gonna have a great time. We're gonna stay relaxed, stay down in it, not gonna get stressed. Just gonna do some stuff. We're gonna write some songs. It's gonna be fine. Now go enjoy. And it never goes that way. It always fucking is gonna be at some point like, I feel like I'm backed into a fucking alley. And there's like a zombie horde, and I can either try to kill them or just fucking just blow my head off with a 12 gauge right there, so I don't have to watch myself get eaten alive.
Right.
You know, that's every project gets to that point. You know, there is your, no matter how you prepare for it, how many fucking vegetables you eat, and try to like get zen about shit. I just always, I'm like, okay, I'm in the fucking weeds.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Not in a bad way. Just like, it's a fucking emotional investment. And when you come out of it and you finish it, it's just the best. It's great. I don't know if we're talking about the same thing, but it's similar, I think.
That's why I like... Yeah. Well, I haven't ever put myself really in a position where I was making all of the decisions.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like all of the real.
But I feel like it's relatable in just a working on your part of a song kind of way, you know, just whatever the role is of the project. However, you know, if it's your music, like it's, you know, like if it's one of your tunes or whatever, even if it's like, you know, the band is a democracy and everyone's got different roles and carrying different loads, you still like are super emotionally invested in your music, and you want it to be good when you're doing it. And it's like, if you're gonna, I mean, I don't know, maybe you're right, dude. Maybe other people don't beat themselves up. I don't know.
I don't, but, well, I think I'm fortunate in that like almost all of the people that I've actually like made music with have always been people that I trusted.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Completely. And so even when I, you know, like I would, times when I've written a song and someone's been like, oh, you like this part should go like this. Or like, and then we're going to add a bridge or whatever. And there have definitely been times when I was like, I don't know. This doesn't seem like a great idea. And then later, but like I trusted it and went totally with it. And then later I was like, fuck, I'm so glad that I like gave that a chance, you know, because like that's what made the tune.
Totally.
It's so weird.
I think that's the beauty of the whole collaboration thing. It's just like that trust element of being able to be like, serve it up and let's see what happens.
Totally. You
know? Like exactly what you're saying is like, you know, I literally would not have been able to make that mix call that, you know, the mastering engineer made. And now it's like ready. It's like a real thing. You know,
exactly.
I could not have put that over the finish line at all. You know, even on Fire in the Field, on Stonehearted Creature, that was you being like, no, you need to sing it here. Sing it there on the one. Stonehearted. That was your being like, no, dude, do it like this.
And I
was
really?
Just, yeah. Totally. And I definitely wasn't like, I don't know. I was definitely like, okay, sweet. I'll just do what he says. No, seriously. Nice. Like, I know I have complete trust with like that, with someone like you or other people, you know, where it's just like, yeah, it's always that open channel.
Yeah, man. Know? Right.
Fucking A. And the only time where it's not open is when I'm like, fuck, I don't know if I can do what it is that you are trying to do. You know,
right.
I think I definitely feel like the ability to just be like open that way and just be like, oh, yeah, I actually don't know. I don't know the answer to this. You know,
oh, yeah,
it's exactly. Usually when the answer will present itself.
Yep.
You know, but yeah, but at the same time, like the other side of it is like, you have to know yourself in a way where you're going to be like, no, like this is fucking what it is. This is the thing and we're going to do this.
Mm.
You know, it's like always know what your shit is, but be open to change it when it's right.
Right, right.
That's why bands fucking don't work eventually. Because it's like, dude, you fucking, I saw you puke on your shoes after you hit on my girlfriend last week. Or whatever, yeah. That's just stereotypical bullshit.
Oh, totally.
Because we collaborate all the time. I mean, we're working on a collaboration right now. What do you think of the tracks? It's kind of a weird thing, right? I mean, we recorded it live. We're talking about the next Fire in the Field album. Not Resurrect, but the next one as of now untitled. We recorded it last, the summer before COVID, whenever the fuck that was, because I don't even know what day it is anymore. So, yeah. Bottolato, Jeff Bottolato on bass, Jared on drums, myself on guitar. We tracked it in a room.
Yeah.
In Somerville, New Alliance. Is it weird, like, being like, what are these fucking songs? Is the band vibe easy to get into for you? Or what do you think so far?
I think I don't want to fuck it up. I mean, I want to do, like, so I get, you know, because I get, like... Yeah, I immediately get sucked into a rabbit hole where I'm like, okay, well, so then I just start with like, I want to give lots of options to whoever is mixing it, you know, and like, and to you, right? So like, so this is partially laziness on my part too, because I'm like, I don't want to make that decision, you know, but I'll be like, I'll have like a, like, oh, this is a cool part. And then this is a cool part. And then I'll, you know, there's organ here. And then, you know, I'll be envisioning like organ during a section,
mm-hmm.
but I play it for the whole song. Right. Yeah. And it, even in places where I'm like, it probably shouldn't go there. Because,
dude, literally, this is the exact approach I took with some of the second guitar parts I was recording.
Awesome. It's
the same idea, which is kind of funny because we're both, Andrew and I are both recording, like I'm recording just some second guitar parts because there's already a guitar. Andrew's adding keyboards. There's no keys as of now. And we actually really haven't heard each other on the track yet.
Right.
But I've just been kind of like, actually, to be totally honest, dude, I've been lying. I've actually only done one session. <laughs> 100%. But it was a marathon session.
Yeah.
Well. But I got ideas out. I got some cool ideas. And honestly, probably a lot of stuff that doesn't need to be there. But I'm excited to put it together.
I think it's kinda goes bitching. Without
saying, but. Thanks, man. I am excited to have Jared fucking finally on a record.
Yeah, right?
I mean, he's been like playing with us for like 2 years. And it's like, has it been 2 years?
That's it?
Yeah.
Wow. It feels like he has not only like somehow like took over, but then also like made shit his own, like in a really cool way. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Like, yeah. He doesn't And it made the songs change.
Definitely.
In a really cool way.
Absolutely. I think in a lot of ways, it's like we're in a, it feels more open. Like we feel like everything feels a little bit more open. I don't know how to, else to describe
it. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Maybe that's too stony, spacey, but that was just fun. Like at Flight, that gig that we played, both of the times we played at Flight with Jared and Jeff and you, that was just like, we've never done that stuff before where we just kind of see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, or like at Bishop's Lounge where there's just like some song that just like had this random fucking jam in them.
Yeah, totally.
And it was great. And like, and I feel like that's definitely a result of Jared's style, his feel, yeah. You know? Yeah, it's cool.
Oh, totally. He leaves like, musicians are like, I feel like in those kind of settings where like improvisation is cool, you know, and curveballs are okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like some musicians are really generous, you know, and they make it really easy for someone else to like sound good.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's like as a keyboard player, like that's the role that I really like. Like I love playing behind other people's solos.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome.
Your keyboard part on the Restless Fire in the Field makes that whole guitar solo. Like before, I remember listening to this guitar solo that from way back on Restless,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, "Yeah, it sucks, guys. Like, sorry, I got to do it again." Yeah. I'm like, no, it's good. Andrew will lay down some keys; it'll be great. I was like, "Whatever, fine. I guess I trust you now." And you did, and it totally makes the part, and it makes
wow.
it, and it just completely elevates the guitar playing, and it honestly makes the guitar playing seem better than it is. So I know exactly what you're talking about. I benefit directly from your generosity, sir.
That feels like I was saying, like, aren't I great?
No,
because I was actually thinking
you're talking about Jared. I get it, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I feel like he is that way. Like he's very, he's encouraging, you know, and leaves
yes.
room and gives, you know what I mean? Like, do your thing.
Going.
Like, do that. You
totally,
know?
Man.
And yeah, to me, that's the fucking fun of
yes.
it. Is like, yeah.
Fuck yeah, dude. That's a good way to look at it. Oh, man. Remember those times?
When there was like an audience?
Oh, man.
Right. I vaguely remember some audiences.
When I didn't look like fucking Abe Lincoln's fucking bastard child. I was literally at Jared's last weekend. We were filming a music video for the Egyptian Jukebox song. And I was like, oh yeah, I'll do this thing where I'm like reading from the book and it's like a curse thing. And I'm like hamming it up and I'm looking at the footage and I'm like, holy fuck. I look like some fucking like, I don't even want to say it.
When you said but Abe fucking, Lincoln, I thought you were going to say ape.
Oh yeah, ape. I mean, I definitely am starting to look like the fucking Cro-Magnons from the Allstate commercial. Is it Allstate?
It's actually the Neanderthals from the Geico commercial, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Anyways, that was me, Mike, talking to Andrew Blowen. This has been another episode of Mike in the Field. If you like what you heard today, feel free to shoot me an email at mike@fireinthefieldmusic.com. Let me know what you think. If there are any topics on the show we should discuss, hey, let me know. I'm here. Go to fireinthefieldmusic.com for more and get ready for April 16th when our new album, Resurrect, is streaming on all major streaming platforms. Peace, love, and fire.